Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson, here in Washington, D.C. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, Anne Ball brings us reactions and updates on the deadly Egyptian church bombings that happened over the weekend. Marcia James has a report on the emptying of some of Earth's major freshwater resources. On What's Trending Today, Dan Friedel tells us about Spanish golfer Sergio Garcia, who finally won a major tournament title. We end our program with this week's health and lifestyle report. Ana Mateo discusses how robots are helping autistic children learn social skills. But first, here is Brian Lynn with the latest on the U.S. Navy's activities in the Korean Peninsula.
The United States Navy has sent a group of warships to waters near the Korean Peninsula as a show of force to North Korea. The strike group is led by the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier. It includes two guided missile destroyers, a guided missile cruiser, and an attack submarine. After stopping in Singapore, the strike group had planned to move on to Australia, but was ordered to head north instead. A spokesman for the U.S. Pacific Command, Dave Benham, said the move was a prudent measure to maintain readiness and presence in the Western Pacific. Benham said currently the number one threat in the region is North Korea. Pyongyang continues a reckless, irresponsible, and destabilizing program of missile tests and nuclear weapons development, he said. U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said President Donald Trump had asked him and other officials to provide suggestions for removing the threat of a nuclear-armed North Korea. McMaster told Fox News that options will be considered to remove that threat to the American people and our allies and partners in the area. He added that Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping agreed during their meeting last week that North Korea's provocative behavior was unacceptable. The strike group deployment to the Korean Peninsula comes after American missiles struck Syrian military targets last week. The airstrikes followed a deadly chemical weapons attack blamed on Syrian forces. The Tomahawk missiles fired into a Syrian airfield were launched from the USS Porter, a guided missile destroyer deployed in the Mediterranean Sea. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the military strike against Syria was a warning to other countries, including North Korea, that a response is likely if they present a threat. Tillerson told ABC News this would include nations that violate international agreements, fail to live up to commitments, and become a threat to others. A South Korean defense ministry spokesman said he considers the strike group a response to the serious situation on the Korean Peninsula. North Korea has fired off several test missiles in recent months and is reportedly planning another nuclear test. Many nations, including ally China, have condemned the tests. The United Nations has also demanded that North Korea give up its nuclear arms program. On Monday, South Korea and China said they had agreed to place stronger sanctions on North Korea if it continues nuclear and missile tests. The agreement was reached during talks between the top nuclear negotiators from both countries. North Korea is already subject to sanctions ordered by the United Nations Security Council. South Korea's negotiator told reporters the latest discussions did not include the possibility of a military response to North Korea's continued testing programs. North Korea has promised to strengthen defenses against airstrikes like those carried out in Syria. A North Korean official said those attacks proved that the North needs nuclear weapons to protect itself against America's ever more reckless moves towards war. I'm Brian Lynn.
Egyptian Christians were burying their dead on Monday after suicide attacks that killed at least 45 people at two Coptic Christian churches in two cities. Dozens more were wounded in the Palm Sunday bombings at St. George's Church north of Cairo and St. Mark's Cathedral in Alexandria. Palm Sunday is a holy day for Christians to celebrate Christ's arrival at the city of Jerusalem a week before Easter. The Islamic State terror group claimed responsibility for the bombings. Egypt's government declared a state of emergency with fears of more violence. The attacks came less than a week after Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, met at the White House with U.S. President Donald Trump to discuss fighting extremism. The White House said President Trump spoke with President el-Sisi on Sunday to convey his deepest condolences to Egypt and to the families who lost loved ones in the heinous terrorist attacks against Christian churches on Palm Sunday. The statement adds, the president also expressed his confidence in President el-Sisi's commitment to protect Christians and all Egyptians. Coptic Christians make up about 10% of Egypt's 92 million people. It is the largest Christian minority in the Middle East. Bishop Anbaugh Suriel is a Coptic Christian leader in Melbourne, Australia. He told VOA more needs to be done to protect Christians in the Middle East because, he says, they are targets of Islamic State.
It's very clear that there is a type of ethnic cleansing by ISIS targeted towards Christians of the Middle East, with a particular emphasis on the Copts of Egypt.
The bombings happened weeks before Pope Francis plans a visit to Egypt. The Pope said,
I pray for the dead and the injured, and I am close in spirit to their families and the entire community. May the Lord convert the hearts of people who saw terror, violence, and death, and even the hearts of those who produce and traffic in weapons.
Egypt's Christians have been a frequent target of terrorist attacks, including arsons, assaults, and bombings. The AP reports that a church bombing last December killed 30 people in Cairo, and a series of killings in the Sinai Peninsula have caused hundreds to leave for safer areas. I'm Ann Ball.
The U.S. government has ended its effort to force Twitter to identify who is behind an account critical of President Donald Trump. After the announcement, Twitter said it has canceled a lawsuit against the U.S. government. Twitter had been planning to claim that federal officials did not have the power to force it to reveal the account owners. The Department of Homeland Security and U.S. Customs and Border Protection had sought the identity of the users of the Twitter account at @alt_USCIS. The account describes itself as immigration resistance. In February, its creators told the Associated Press news agency that they are current and former employees of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or USCIS. That is part of the Department of Homeland Security. Almost 9,000 messages have been sent by the account since it was created in January, the month Trump took office. It is one of several accounts that reportedly have been created by former or current federal employees who oppose Trump. It is not known why the government canceled its effort to identify the creator or creators of the Twitter account. And it is not known if the government has also ended its own investigation into who is operating the account. The American Civil Liberties Union called the government's decision to withdraw its request a big victory for free speech and the right to dissent. Friday, the account tweeted, "We want to thank Twitter and ACLU for standing up for the right of free anonymous speech. Thank you, Resistance, for standing up for us." News reports about the account have helped it sharply increase the number of people who are following it. @alt_USCIS now has more than 192,000 followers.
The Earth is losing some of its major freshwater supplies. But these water resources are not lakes or rivers. They are called aquifers. They formed deep underground as the Earth developed. Some aquifers are so deep that water from very heavy rains cannot reach them through all the rock and dirt. Many aquifers provide irrigation water for crops. These freshwater deposits are helping farmers in many countries. A new report says some aquifers are being emptied. It warns this could affect food security and economies around the world. Irrigated agriculture is responsible for about 80% or more of freshwater use worldwide. A growing part of that comes from underground aquifers because of dry weather or farmers growing crops in areas with little rainfall. But researchers say taking water from aquifers is creating a large problem, which is not getting much attention. And even if it does receive attention, scientists warn there is not much that can be done to repair them. The study was a project of researchers at the University College London and the Goddard Institute of Space Studies in New York. The institute is part of NASA, the American Space Agency. The study found that 11% of what is called disappearing groundwater from aquifers is used to grow internationally traded food. Michael Puma is a research scientist at NASA and Columbia University. He notes that it is difficult to measure groundwater because it is so deep underground. He says it also is difficult to know how much water is there and where it is. Puma says the researchers examined deep aquifers from which water is being removed. He says the water from these aquifers may not be replaced for hundreds of years.
For it to be replenished, you'd have to have a major shift in the climate. It'd be much wetter in these regions that are currently very dry.
The report says 7 countries use the most non-renewable groundwater for agricultural production. The 7 are the United States, India, Pakistan, China, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia. Puma notes that the United States is one of the world's major exporters of food. He notes that if China and India use up the groundwater they need to feed their populations, they would be forced to import more food. This increased demand could cause food prices to rise. Puma says some American states know that their deep aquifers are being emptied.
California recognizes they're facing groundwater depletion. Kansas, they also recognize they're facing groundwater depletion issues. Yet the solutions aren't clear. There's been attempts to slow down the use of the groundwater, but that's not solving the problem because we have a limited supply that's not going to be replenished.
Puma says state officials should work to control the groundwater that remains.
To make true progress on this front, we have to have this discussion of how will we adjust our farms, our farming activities, to deal with a future where we're going to face a situation where groundwater will no longer be present in these locations.
Puma says the study shows that while countries like Somalia are dealing with little rainfall, the world may someday face an underground drought.
It's a really global issue. All countries around the world are facing this challenge. We don't have any great solutions or strategies to deal with this. So at the very least, we need to have discussions to come up with new ways, new strategies that recognize this problem and try and coordinate how we might adjust our policies.
Any strategy must balance the short-term need for food for the world with the long-term survival of the Earth's aquifers. I'm Marcia James.
This is What's Trending Today. Many sports fans got to know Sergio Garcia of Spain in 1999. He was just 19 years old when he made one of the most memorable shots of that year's Professional Golf Association Championship Tournament. Garcia hit the ball from the base of a tree and over a small hill onto the putting green. He could not see the shot, so he ran down the fairway and jumped in the air to see his ball. Many people were excited to see the young Spaniard, who grew up playing golf along the Mediterranean Sea, offer a challenge to Tiger Woods. Woods won that 1999 tournament by one shot over Garcia. And then he kept winning. Woods has won 14 major championships. Before Sunday, Garcia had none. If you had told sports fans 18 years ago that it would take that long for Garcia to win a major championship, many would have laughed. Garcia has had a remarkable career. He won many tournaments and helped Europe win 5 Ryder Cups. He earned almost $30 million playing golf. He has been one of the best golfers in the world for over 10 years. But in sports, you are not considered among the great athletes if you do not win a Super Bowl, a World Series, a World Cup, or NBA championship. The same goes for golf. If a player does not win the Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, or the PGA Championship, he is only good. Now, Garcia is counted among the greats, and it took a great final round on Sunday for him to win the championship. Garcia's first shot on the 13th hole was bad, but he recovered to make a par. That set him up for a good finish, including making an eagle on the 15th hole that tied him with Justin Rose. Both golfers missed putts that could have clinched the tournament on the 18th hole. On his 74th attempt to win a major championship, Garcia made a long putt in the 19th hole, a tiebreaker, to finally win his first one. Garcia said he was glad to have a happy ending. He won almost $2 million for his efforts. And he is no longer remembered as one of the best players to have never won a major. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. April is Autism Awareness Month in the United States. Autism, also known as autism spectrum disorder, is a complex developmental disability. It affects a person's ability to communicate and do things with other people. Children with autism face many challenges. For example, schools can be a difficult place for autistic children. Many schools are filled with loud noises, active classrooms, and nearly non-stop social interactions. So, researchers in Britain have made a child-sized robot to help autistic children learn social skills. The robot, called Caspar, can improve their ability to communicate with adults and other children. Dealing with Caspar is easier for most children with autism than interacting with someone else. The robot uses games and songs to help the children learn social interaction and communication skills. Ben Robbins is with the University of Hertfordshire. He says the robot's movements are directed by an adult who uses remote control equipment. So a teacher or therapist is always involved. Robbins explains that the robot gives therapists more ways to interact with autistic children. He adds that the children seem more at ease when they look at Caspar's face.
Sometimes they're looking in the face and the eye gaze with the robot much more than what they do with the person.
He adds Caspar is flexible. It can change to meet the needs of the 170 children who have played with him over the past 10 years. This flexibility is important. Children with autism spectrum disorder often have problems with spoken language and eye contact. But the signs of the condition can differ greatly from one child to the next. The word spectrum is an important part of the definition. You might hear of a child described as being on the spectrum. This means that tests showed the child has some level of autism. It could be minor or quite severe. Alice Lynch works with an organization called Tracks Autism. She has been studying Caspar's effect on students in the classroom. Lynch says the robot has had a major effect on the behavior of the students. She notes there was one boy who could not eat with his classmates. But now, after feeding Caspar, he has begun to take part or integrate himself in classroom activities. For example, he now eats meals with other students.
And then we started doing it with Caspar, and he really, really enjoyed feeding Caspar, making him eat when he was hungry, things like that. And now he's starting to kind of integrate into the classroom and eat alongside his peers.
Ben Robbins says research like this is important. It shows that what the child learns with Caspar transfers to other situations or contexts in his or her life.
These long-term studies, it's very important because it's important to see how is there any transference of these skills that they play with the robot into other contexts, like in the classroom or at home. What's happened outside the context of the robot?
The Caspar robot is still in development. However, its designers say their goal is to see every child who could benefit from the robot get their very own Caspar. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for more stories and information from around the world. For VOA Learning English, I'm Ashley Thompson.